I want to read a particular text from Genesis 37 that was not specifically referenced here. It kind of sets the stage for the entire story of Joseph from Genesis 37 through Genesis 50. So I'm going to be reading in Genesis 37, starting in verse 5. Now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. They already disliked him because of their father's favoritism towards him, but they hated him even more. He said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves," that's grain, "in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brother said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream, and he told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." And when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. It's the word of the Lord for the nurture and admonition of his people today. Thanks be to God. We're going to be a little bit all over the place here, but I'll try to guide you along because we're going to try to take the totality of Joseph here and allow God to speak to us through it. Joseph has a dream. He has two dreams specifically, but it seems that the concept of the two dreams is basically the same. Joseph has been born to rule. God's desire for him is that he is born to be a ruler. He is born to reign, that he is going to be the leader of his brothers, even though he is the 11th of 12 sons born to Jacob, that he is born of God, called of God to lead the family. Now, the brothers obviously struggle with this, but this is a dream that God has given him. It's an incredible dream. I can only imagine the excitement that must have been a part of Joseph when he received these and kind of was understanding what God was communicating to him through these dreams. The rest of the narrative of Joseph, quite flatly, are, I would say, three specific situations in which the dream attempts to be stuffed out. That the dream is being threatened in some form or fashion. The first we see in the fancy dry erase storyboard. It's like the new fashion form of a flannel graph, I guess, for those of you who remember flannel graphs. But in the story up front that you saw, that the first place where this dream gets threatened is by the violence of his brothers. The story mentions is that Joseph is told by his father, "Go check on your 10 brothers. They're out in the field taking care of the sheep." And then Joseph goes and he finds his brothers and they see him coming a long way off. And they said, "Here comes that dreamer," here in Genesis 37. And they conspire with one another to figure out a way to eliminate the dreamer. And that by their violence, that they look to eliminate the dream. They look to eliminate Joseph's dream by their violence. And that this is a place where, quite frankly, many of us find ourselves in the midst of this type of violent activity sometimes. That's the first place. That this violent way in which the dream looks to be killed, the dream looks to be snuffed out by the violence of the world around us. The next one, and we thankfully that the story also mentioned the narrative of Potiphar, who is the Egyptian master that Joseph is sold to, and that we're given a second way in which the dream is snuffed out. And quite frankly, this is the one that I think that we in our world have the greatest problem with, and we will get there in a few moments. But that, as the narrative mentions, it's just, you saw on the screen, and you can find this in Genesis 39, Joseph and his interaction with Potiphar's wife. that the threat to the dream isn't a violent threat. It's not that Joseph is going to die. It's that Joseph is being lured and tempted to forsake his dream for the ways of the world is the way that we use it. That Joseph is being tempted and seduced to let go of his dream that God has given to him in order to have the pleasures and to have the riches of the world. He has been placed over everything in this master's home, and that the only thing that his master has held back from him is his own wife. And so that Joseph very well could have just said, this is the way that the world works, is that I'm the one that's ruling the house. I should be able to have whatever I want. Or as some of the crazy, I remember driving, I was driving on Interstate 40 from Pennsylvania, and I was going to Nashville, Tennessee, and I was west of Knoxville. If those of you who've driven Interstate 40, I was west of Knoxville, Tennessee, on Interstate 40 coming up through the mountains. And there's a billboard on Interstate 40. I was going to school, and it was I was going to Trevecca for a class. And on the billboard, it said this: "You only live once. Have an affair." And then it had a website for you to apparently be able to hook up with somebody. And I was just like, what type of logic is this? But I drove by that billboard 6-7 years ago, and I still remember how absolutely ludicrous it sounded to me that you only live once, so you might as well have an affair, right? That this is the kind of idea, the seduction of the world, that it goes, well, that sounds kind of fun. I have everything else. I might as well just indulge. And that Joseph had the opportunity to forsake his dream, to let go of his dream, to chase after the pleasures of the world. There's a third way that Joseph does this, and we're going to talk about this one as well, because this is another place where I believe that we struggle in our world today. And we don't talk about this one. When we talk about Joseph, we talk about his brothers beating him up and all the jealousy of his brothers. We talk about Joseph's interaction with Potiphar, particularly because our world struggles with sexual sin. But the other place where Joseph has the dream threatened is actually in his interaction with Pharaoh. Now, if we grab hold of the narrative that we saw earlier, Joseph has interpreted dreams while he's in prison. And Pharaoh has, 2 years later, Pharaoh has these very, very concerning dreams of the skinny cows eating the fat cows, and the dry, crackly grains of head eating the healthy grain, heads of grain. And that Pharaoh can't figure it out, and no one can interpret the dream. And so suddenly they say, oh, there's this dude in prison that I remember. I'm going to have him come. You should have him come and interpret the dream. And that Pharaoh brings him in, gives him a new, washes him up, gives him a good set of clothing. But that this is what happens. This is in Genesis 41, starting in verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Suddenly, Joseph's ability to be able to interpret the dream is of value to someone of power. His ability to do this is of value to someone who has influence. Quite honestly, at this point in time, the most influential and powerful person probably in the entire known world. And that this is where we, in verse 15, he says, I heard you can do this. This is a place in which Joseph has the ability to let go of the dream. And we don't talk about this. Because what Joseph says in verse 16 of Genesis 41 is absolutely remarkable. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. It is not in me. I want us to think about that. Picture yourself standing in front of the President of the United States. And that he says to you, I know that you have the ability to do this. And you look square him in the face and say, I can't do that. That's what Joseph does. It's not in me to do this. I know that you think that I'm valuable to you. I know that you think that I have something to give you that's going to help you out. I can't do it. But what does Joseph say? It is not in me. But God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. That Joseph had the ability to, in his arrogance or his pride, to grab hold of the idea of, oh yeah, can give you an answer, Pharaoh. But he remains humble and points to the one who gives the dream to begin with. And says, no, you need to hear about this God who gave you the dream. He is the one that will give you the answer. You see that all three of these places inside of Joseph's life, I believe, were places where the dream was attempted to be destroyed in some form or fashion. That the dream of God over Joseph's life had the ability to be broken in half in three places in his story throughout the Genesis 37 through 50. There might be a couple of others in his interaction with his brothers, but I think these are the three big ones. In the first one, that this violent activity, that he hears the dream and he starts to speak it and someone just wants to slap it out of him. Say, who do you think you are? You'll never do that. You think you're going to? Nah, it's impossible. Never going to happen. Stop even thinking that way. It's a violent reaction. It might not, towards Joseph. In his case, it's a violent where he's actually like they're thinking about killing him. But that it's a violent reaction. The second place, I'm just trying to review this so that we can start to figure out how to apply this to our lives. The second place is that the dream had the ability to be broken in half or snuffed out, was that the dream had the ability to be seduced by the world. And that the temptations of Joseph's flesh, the temptations of Joseph's eyes, had the ability to take that dream and snuff it out. And finally, before the most powerful man in the world, that Joseph had the ability to snuff out that dream by denying the God who gave him the dream. As I was thinking through this and praying through this, God gave me this last night, and it absolutely blew my mind because I've never heard this before, but I believe it to be true. Many of you in here know the parable of the soils that Jesus has provided for us. You can find it in Mark 4 if you've not read it before. But the parable of the soils is this incredible parable in which Jesus says that there was a farmer who went to sow seed, and then he started scattering seed, and that there were three specific types of soil that did not produce a crop. In other words, that the dream of God for that seed did not occur. That the dream for that seed that was being casted out, that the farmer had, this seed's going to produce fruit, it's going to produce grain, it's going to give me an abundance of fruit, an abundance. That this dream for that seed, three of the soil types, that dream for that seed gets snuffed out. The first one is the violent one of Joseph. That before that dream even had the ability to start to come about, that the brothers wanted to kill him and get rid of him. That is the hard soil. The hard soil that the seed gets cast on and the birds come and eat the seed off the ground. That this is that part of Joseph. And this is an incredible thing. Like I said, I just boggled my mind when I was praying last night. And I'm like, oh my word, this works. I believe that this is true. The second soil, that the seed springs up, but is choked out. And when Jesus gives the interpretation of the parable to the disciples, he says that the cares of the world choke out the seed, choke out the plant. In other words, all of your desires for all of these worldly things choke out the ability of that seed to be able to produce fruit, to be able to produce grain, to be useful for the sake of the kingdom of God. And that the other one, where this shallow soil and the seed immediately springs up, but does not hold out in the day of persecution. If there was anybody on the planet that had the ability to persecute Joseph for his faith, it was Pharaoh. That if Pharaoh said, I don't like the God of the Hebrews, get out of here. Or off with his head. I don't like this God. These three soils I see in the story of Joseph. But the incredible thing is that Joseph is not either one of those three soils. Joseph is this fourth soil. Joseph is this one, this good soil that receives the word of the Lord and perseveres through persecution, is faithful under temptation and is able to endure violence in a harvest of righteousness 30, 60, 100 fold more than what was sown. Pretty powerful. God has dreams for you. He's sowing seed into your life that he's desiring to see grow into incredible ways. And some of you are going, man, I'm too old to be dreaming dreams. No, you're not. The book of Joel, the vision of the prophet, is that when the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, that the old men will have visions. The young men will dream dreams. That young and old, no, there's no difference any longer, but that you older men and women in the room that you're going, I don't have enough life in front of me to be able to dream a big dream. No, that's not true. When the Spirit of God comes upon you, that you will be given visions and dreams from the throne of God himself. God's given you dream. He has dreams for you, sowing seed into you. Asking it to grow. The first kind of corporate dream that I want to talk about is God's dream for his people as a whole. God has a dream for us together. And we've talked about this a lot, but God's dream for us in Jesus Christ is that we would figure out how to love one another well. He longs for that. And we're learning. We're learning that. We're figuring that out. Bit by bit, we're figuring out how to love one another, how to have conversation with one another that's moving us towards healthy and loving relationships. We're getting it. We're starting to get there. But that the other dream of God is that as we live that community of faith together, as we live that community of love that is described in 1 Corinthians 13, that as we live that thing out, that people are going to go, that is amazing. I want a part. I want in. How do I get there? I want to be a part of it. And that then we're given the opportunity to say, you need to hear about this Jesus, because it is only by that Jesus that I have the ability to do what I'm doing. That's a dream that God has for his church. But that there are other things and individual dreams that I believe that God has for you. God has dreams that some of you would be free. Because some of you are still stuck. You're still stuck in patterns of sin that you know are holding you back. You're still stuck in ways of thinking, in ways of interacting with people that are damaging and destructive. You know it too when you take a step back and you go, I know that when I do this, it hurts me and it hurts other people. You know that to be true. And God has a dream that you would be free, because it is for freedom that Christ has set us free, as Paul tells us in Galatians 5. That he has set you free. Romans 8, Paul shares with us that life in the Spirit starts with this incredible reality that there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. You're no longer guilty before him if you have faith. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus has set you free from the law of sin and death. Praise be to God. Some of the dreams that God has for you is, I believe that there are some of you in here, some of you young folk even, that God is knocking on the door of your heart saying, there's a special place of service that I have for you. Maybe it's going to be overseas. I don't know. Maybe someone in here in this room, God's saying, there's going to be a place of service as a missionary. Or some of you are being called into vocational ministry. Or some of you are being called to start something new. Maybe there's some ministry or some nonprofit organization that would benefit the world and that God would use powerfully. What is that dream that God's placing in you? What's the dream for your family that God is speaking over your life? I know that part of the dream that God is speaking over my family is that I have four boys that I desperately want to see, and I believe that God desperately wants to see living their lives fully devoted to the life that Jesus longs for them. And that I would not allow, well, let me get there. I'm not going to get there yet. But that's part of the dream that I believe that God has for my four sons. That each one of them, that God is speaking a vision, is speaking a dream over their lives. And that I just simply want to be a good steward of what God's dream is. I don't want to get in the way of that dream. I don't want to hinder the dream of God because I have some good idea of what Isaiah, Noah, and Asher and Micah should be doing. Because let me tell you, my good idea is going to ruin them. But that's part of the dream. I have a dream one day, and I believe that this is part of God's dream, that I will find a place of reconciliation with my Father. That God is dreaming that, and some of you in here need to find reconciliation with people in your lives. Sons, daughters, parents, grandchildren, I don't know. But some of you need to find some of those places. And maybe God's speaking that dream over your life. I don't know. Maybe part of the dream that God has for you is that you would find an incredible emotional healing that you desperately need to get free from the bondage of hurt that is in your past. I don't know. Maybe that's part of the dream that God's speaking over your life. But this is what we do. First of all, I wonder how many of us are actually waiting in the presence of God long enough to hear the dream that God has for our lives. We sang it earlier. Strength for the dream rises when we wait upon the Lord. When we wait upon the Lord, when you come into His presence and allow Him to transform you, the dream will come. The vision for your life will come. The vision for your family will come. But you need to take the time to turn off the junk of your life for a few moments to come into the presence of God and wait there. You need to do that. Turn off the television, please. Turn off your tablet. Turn off your cell phone. Get rid of the music. I know the music can be a good... Turn off the talk radio. Please. And allow yourself to wait in silence before the presence of God. For when you are there, the vision and dream of God will be communicated to you. I believe it. I believe it. Joseph didn't have television or a cell phone or a radio, or a car, or all of that other junk to fill his life. But in his emptiness, God was able to fill it with his vision. So my guess is that many of us have not even taken the time to wait in the presence of God to hear the dream. But when we do hear the dream, what happens to it? Are there those in your life, maybe you have received the dream. Maybe you have received, this is what God wants me to do. This is where God is bringing me. This is what God's going to do in my life. And perhaps there's some type of violent reaction to that dream. You've heard me tell this story. There's a wonderful man. He actually had a very good job. And he felt a call upon his life after going through college and getting a job in the IT field. He felt a call upon his life to go on a year-long mission excursion. And when he told his parents, he was single, he told his parents flipped out, freaked out. They had a violent reaction to the dream of God upon his life. They were being Joseph's brothers. There are people in your life that are going, you will never attain that. Why are you even thinking that way? Don't you know all of the other responsibilities that you have? Don't you know what your proper place is? That would be my reaction if I was one of Joseph's brothers. I would be like, who do you think you are? Your appropriate place, the proper place where you belong, is 11th in line. So get in row. We'll all line up, nice single file. Reuben will be first, so on and so forth. Judah will be fourth. We'll get in line. Joseph, you belong in 11th. Benjamin, you'll be 12th, and we'll be all good. And that some of you are this way, that you go, God needs to work in the ways that I think are appropriate. God needs to dream dreams that I think fit with my life or fit with your life. God might be dreaming a dream for you, but if I don't think it fits your life, this is where we struggle with our children. Where I said, but I don't want to get in the way of God's dream for my four boys. Is that I have visions of what I want my kids to do. You know my children. Some of you have seen them. Isaiah, he's a great example. Isaiah has been given a gift that I can't comprehend. And you guys know that, those of you who've seen him. I don't understand how a kid his age, literally at the age of 5, could play drums the way he plays it. And there's part of me that goes, get that kid in an academy now because he's going to make lots of money so I can retire. Right? And don't get me wrong, he is an incredible gift. But my dream for Isaiah's gift has the potential to ruin Isaiah. And that I could actually be doing violence to him by pressing myself upon him. Now, I am his father, and sometimes he needs some correcting. Sometimes he needs some guiding and shepherding in his life, absolutely. But that I need to always allow my vision for his life to be subservient, to be underneath the vision that God has, the dream that God has for him. Isaiah is a good example of that. The other three we're working on yet. Some of you have that. The second place where we struggle with this dream thing, like I said, this is where I think that most of us, when we receive the dream, really struggle. I think some of us don't take the time to wait for the dream. When we receive the dream, this is the place where it becomes difficult. Joseph lands in slavery. The dream seems all but gone, that he's kind of holding on to hope in the dream. He's just, that's all he's got left. All he's got left is hope that this God that gave him the dream is going to follow through. That's what he has left. And that suddenly, this woman starts coming on to him. And the seduction of the world, the lust of the flesh is suddenly there, live and in person. And that he's probably gone, I could do this and not get caught. And you know what? Maybe even I can still get the dream and still be able to indulge in these things. But that all that he's really doing is he's taking the dream that's calling him to live as God has called him to live, that he is called to rule, and he's going to be called to reign, and that he's going to throw it away for these choked out pleasures of his life. This is what we do. We're really good at this, and this is the reason why I told you to turn off the TV and your cell phones and your tablets, because those are places in which you get tempted and choked out. And if you don't believe it, turn it off for a while and start hearing the voice of God, and that you will see how much that thing, those various medias have the ability to change the way you think about the world. Allow yourself to come before God in the scripture and you'll see it. It's there. It's incredible. But that there's other temptations as well. Some of them are physical. Some of them are emotional. But the question is, what are those places? What are those places in our lives where we just simply give in to living the life of the world rather than continuing to live for the dream? Finally, the dream requires us to be bold with the name of the Lord. As Joseph struggles, has this option to say, yeah, Pharaoh, I can give you the interpretation of your dream. But he says, no, I don't have it. God has it. Are you ready, as Peter says, at all times, to give account for the hope that you have? Are you ready at all times to give an answer to those who are curious about who you are and what's in your life? It's a great example as well. I think Heather will let me share the story. She's not here to tell me no right now. So I'm going to tell it anyway. My children were named intentionally. The Lord gave us the names. None of my children had names when they were born, but we waited until they were born and we prayed over them and the Lord gave us names. The most challenging name to find was Noah's. He has continued to be my biggest struggle. So, but anyway, I love Noah to death, but he just tends to be my biggest problem. But where Heather's at the pool or at the pool with the kids and someone engages in conversation about the boys. And that we're talking about, say, oh, the woman recognizes that, oh, these are all biblical names. And then we go, oh, yeah, and Heather has the opportunity to share about this. And I've had it too. In fact, just yesterday, I had three of the kids at the store, and people were asking me, oh, those are biblical names. It's so nice. That's nice to do. But that in the midst of that conversation, I have the opportunity to say, oh, yeah, I like the Bible. And who does that focus on? Me. The subject of that sentence is I. Oh, I like the Bible. Or I could say to the person when I was at the store yesterday with three of the four, I did not have all four of them, but I had three of the four, and I was there. I could have said to that person, yes, they are biblical names because the Lord gave us those names for our children, because I believe He has a dream over their life and that the name is connected to it. There's a difference in those two things, because who is being pointed to? The Lord is being pointed to the second way, and that I need to figure out how to do that. Because when I do that, the dream of my children's life is being spoken again. The dream over my family's life, over my life, is being spoken again. Because the focus is not on what I like. The focus is on the dream of God. This is the incredible thing about the dream. We're going to end here today. As Joseph is walking through years of struggle and disappointment, he's forgotten in jail for 2 years. He's sold by his own brothers into slavery only because one of them came up with a plan not to kill him. And he's dealing with this for years of this disappointment, this question mark, this scratching of the head, what's going on? That we're given very little theology, very little about what God is doing in the midst of this, but it comes out in a couple of specific statements, and I want us to see it in Genesis 39, because this is the dream, this is the truth about the dream of God for your life, the dream of your holiness, the dream of what God's going to do. 39 verse 1, now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an official officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. The Lord was with him. In the midst of the dream that God has spoken over him, the Lord was with him. He's then faithful to the dream with Potiphar's wife. And what happens? He gets thrown in prison. But this is what happens in Genesis 39, verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph in prison and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because The Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made succeed. Do you understand? It's not your job to fulfill your dream. Your job is to be faithful to the one who has given you the dream, and that he will fulfill that dream in due time. He will be with you wherever you go. He's simply asking you to walk close with him. Uninterrupted relationship with Jesus Christ. Are you willing to walk hand in hand with him? If you will, he will never leave you nor forsake you. Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, as Jesus says in Matthew 28. I'll be with you in the fire. I'll be with you in the flood. Simply hold on, and you'll be lifted up in due time. Are you ready to walk that? Lean into the presence of God. Wait upon him. Hear his dream. Then walk faithfully with him. Just a closer walk with thee. I love this. As I walk this world of trouble, this world of snare, if I falter, Lord, who cares? Who with me my burden shares? None but thee, Lord, none but thee. Those, some of you know that old spiritual. But just a closer walk with thee. Grant it, Jesus. 'Tis my plea. I want to sing that chorus in closing this morning. Can we do that? Let's stand. I'm going to grab it here. Ready? We're going to sing this chorus together. All right, now we got some volume. Here we go. We can rejoice in this. As we walk close with the Lord, he will never leave us. He will never forsake us. There we go. Just a closer walk. Sing it out. Just a closer walk with me. Great Jesus, 'tis my plea.